Hey, it's Cappy, and this is Beyond the Plate, Heard, the audio newsletter where I share what's on my plate, literally and figuratively. From culinary insights to restaurants and recipes, it's everything I'm seeing, tasting, and talking about in just a few minutes. This isn't a peer-reviewed culinary journal. It's just my take on what I'm into at the moment. So let's dive in, and I hope you all take something from my plate. All right, first up is Puerto Sagua Restaurant on Miami Beach. Puerto Sagua is a family-owned Cuban restaurant that's on the corner of 7th and Collins on South Beach. And it's been there for like over 60 years. And it kind of feels like it. And I mean that in a good way. This is quintessential, traditional, casual Cuban food. It's the kind of place that locals have been going to like their whole lives. And I used to go when I lived in Miami 20 years ago. And I swear it's like the same food, same vibe, same counter. You get it. They serve breakfast, lunch, and dinner. I'm usually there for breakfast or lunch. Good old Cuban toast, eggs, cafe con leche. But I do know people who specifically go for dinner and they do not veer off course for their dishes that they always get. There's an oxtail dish, a fish dish. I don't remember. But ask your server. Like always at a place like this, lean on that server that's worked there forever. Ask them what they love and trust the process. I always grab a seat at the old school diner counter if I'm dining solo. And look, this isn't like blow you away food, but you're going to get a really good taste of traditional Cuban food, culture, and Miami. I will add that I know plenty of well-known chefs who do not visit Miami without a stop at Puerto Sagua. Throughout this episode, you can find all the links and handles I mentioned in the show notes. Next up is Shared Cultures Miso. Okay, Shared Cultures is a small batch fermentation company in San Francisco doing what they call farm to ferment, miso, shoyu, and umami seasonings using koji. Founders Kevin and Eliana draw inspiration from traditional fermentation methods, also wild foraged ingredients, all the agriculture that they have in Northern California, and their own family food traditions. But they're doing it with this modern twist, like a modern lens. I honestly forgot how I first found them, but I ordered a sample pack originally. And I remember I got these little mini jars. I remember trying a corn miso, a black garlic miso, and most recently, a morel mushroom miso that I turned into a delicious pasta sauce. I just think it's a cool story and a unique business. And in a time when fermented foods are constantly part of the health and wellness conversation, this just feels right. So check out their site. They always have fascinating seasonal flavors, which reminds me I need to restock. Next up is a recipe. It's the New York Times slow cooker hoisin garlic chicken by Sarah DiGregorio. I think I featured a recipe from Sarah once before on one of these episodes. Anyway, slow cooker talk. I have a very simple opinion about slow cooker recipes. One, they should not have more than 10 ingredients, ideally much less than that. And two, they should have minimal steps. And by minimal steps, I mean put everything in the slow cooker, turn it on, and walk away for a few hours or more. To me, that's the whole point of a slow cooker. And this recipe pretty much fits the bill. It caught my eye. We made it, and the fam was pretty pleased. So if you're into slow cookers, this recipe may be one worth checking out. I will include the link to the recipe in the show notes. Next up is Social Impact, and it's a double duty shout out. And yes, this is a shameless plug to check out our season finale episode of Beyond the Plate last week with Jamie Oliver. But if we're talking about someone who embodies social impact in the culinary industry, you've got to hand it to this guy. He was such an early voice advocating for better food systems, better school lunches, real change. Like long before it was mainstream for chefs to do that type of work. Not that chefs haven't always been super generous in the social impact and philanthropy space. Jamie just chose to use his voice very early in his career. And something he said kind of stuck with me, and I'm loosely quoting it here, but you'll pick up what I'm putting down. He said something along the lines of, if you're a parent or someone passionate about something that feels wrong, the first emotion you'll feel is lonely. You feel like you can't make change alone. And then he goes on to say, but if you get 5 people together, then 10 people together, and you create a united front, then the next step is to get to 100,000 people. And that's when real change starts to happen. So for me, this was a powerful reminder that collective action matters, especially in food. So if you want to hear that full conversation with Jamie, check out our Beyond the Plate episode from last week. Next up is the South Beach Wine and Food Festival. The South Beach Wine and Food Festival is one of the best food festivals in the world. You have the best food personalities, the best chefs, tons of big names. So if you want to see it and eat the best of the best, it's happening this week, February 19th to 22nd in Miami. All net proceeds benefit the Florida International University Chaplain School of Hospitality and Tourism Management, which I'm proud to say is one of my alma maters. And so far, the festival has raised over $45 million for the school. I'll be there with the boss lady, Rachel Ray. She's hosting the 20th annual Burger Bash on Thursday night, where we'll also meet up with our 2026 Rachel Ray Yummo Scholarship winners. And then we've got a snazzy, intimate dinner Friday night that is sold out. So I'm sorry. But there are often last-minute tickets floating around for various events. So if you're in Miami, check out their website or just text the festival director, Lee Schrager, at 786. I'm totally kidding. Don't do that. And again, you can find all the links and handles I mentioned in the show notes. One last thing before I leave you. In the last couple Herd episodes, we talked about checking your spice cabinet and then restocking your pantry or your basic pantry. So now let's talk about hot sauce, a fave of mine. If you're like me and you have one too many bottles in your fridge, it might be time to clean house. I do this once or twice a year or so because I always think I have 5 to 10 bottles, but I have closer to 30 bottles or more. So here's my rule. If you haven't used a bottle of hot sauce in a year that you can remember, or you don't even remember what it tastes like, it may be time to get rid of that bottle. But give yourself a one-in, one-out policy. If you toss an old bottle of hot sauce, you're allowed to order or buy a new one. Wanted to give a couple shout-outs. One to Coutinho Sauce Company. This is hands down one of my favorites. It's super well-balanced, great flavor, and not just heat for the sake of heat. And two, Wheelnut Spice Company, spelled Ouillemette. This is father-daughter owned, and it's based in the north suburbs of Chicago. You'll find them in spots around Evanston and the Wilmette area, but they're in other surrounding suburbs as well. And listen, I'm always open to new hot sauce recommendations. For me, I prefer good flavor with a nice kick, but I don't want something that's going to blow my head off where all I taste is spice. Thanks for listening to Herd, a production of Beyond the Plate. You can find all the links and handles I mentioned in the show notes. If you like this, then tap the follow button and tune in for more Herd, where I share what I'm seeing, tasting, and loving lately in food and hospitality. And if your friends and family may enjoy it, I hope you'll share it with them. Until next time.